You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
We got to have personal responsibility, political accountability, and corporate culpability.
Get up, 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 get up.
We must eliminate poverty. I don't care what color the person, a child.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
Why does a pessimist see a glass half empty, but an optimist see a glass half full? Are we locked into regressive mentality by chains unseen? If you try to fail and then succeed, which have you done? Do you ask enough questions or do you settle for what you know? The only questions that really matter are the ones you ask yourself. Welcome to Mental Dialogue. All I ask is that you think.
Get up, get up, get up.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Ashley, one of our Queens of Intellect members, also the CEO of Making Money Matters. Thank you, Queen, for being with us as we are lining up for our Making Money Matter Monday in a couple of days. So thank you for being with us. Perfect timing, if you will. But if you will, say hello to the intellectual outcast before we introduce our special guest today. How are you doing, Queen?
Yeah. All is well on this side. Good morning, y'all. Happy Saturday. I hope y'all are having a fantastic start to the day. I'm very much looking forward to the conversation. So thank you so much for having me on as a co-host today.
No, absolutely. I am super excited about this special guest, David Jones. Thank you, Queen, for being with us this morning. How are you doing? Say hello to the intellectual outcast out there listening, as I like call the listeners, if you will, and say hello to Ashley, our co-host this morning. And if you will, Queen, after saying hello, give a little bit of your background in reference to today's discussion question before we let the cat out the bag on the actual question. But thank you again, Queen, for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Hey, y'all, hey. I am so honored to be able to share the space with you today and talk a little bit about my financial professional experience over the last 20 years and how I can be able to help other people improve their financial journey.
Well, I love it. You are the author of Who Taught You How to Be Broke? And so for anybody that's seen the advertisement for today, then we've pretty much let the cat out the bag on this morning's discussion question. If you are a first-time listener to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, again, I go by the a.k.a. Black Socrates. So we take the Socratic method to these various questions on race, sex, and culture, and we definitely love to get into economic empowerment from time to time. And so today's show is definitely that, as we, again, have two heavy hitters in the financial space, Ashley Thomas, again, being the CEO of Making Money Matters, and David Jones, the author of the book. And today's discussion question, who taught you how to be broke? And Ashley, before we turn it over to our special guest, we'll do it the way we always do. When you first heard the question worded that particular way, do you recall the initial thought that popped in your head, Ashley?
This is going to go over some people's heads. That was my first thought.
Okay, fair enough. Now, in this situation, this is super unique because the discussion question is actually the title of your book, if you will, David. And so I don't know if it's even fair to ask you what's your first thought. You know, like, this is our class. We always start the show this way. But I just thought about it as I'm about to ask you this question. I don't even know if we can ask you your first thought. You wrote the damn book. You feel me, Queen? So maybe how about that?
Literally, you wrote the damn book.
I don't know
book.
What your first thought would be. How about this? What was the thought in naming the book that? Let's go with that. Let's start with that, because it ain't fair to ask you what was your first thought. Yeah, what was your thought in naming the book that particular title? I love the title. Go ahead, Queen.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you appreciate it. So I have a financial mentor that I have watched and studied for years. Her name is Melanie Hobson Lucas, and she did this ABC special maybe about 10 or 15 years ago that was called Unbroke. And it basically had all of these celebrities and actors and people who were giving snippets of what it means to have money, but also not know what to do with that money. Because doesn't matter how much money you have, nobody teaches you how to use the money, then you're going to blow the money. We see it with athletes. We see it with celebrities. We see it with lottery winners. So we have to go back to the original question. Okay, well, yeah, we're broke, but who taught you how to be broke? Who taught you about money? Who taught you what you were supposed to do? And that was the question that I felt like Melanie left on the table. So all love and due respect to the most beautiful and the most highest, but I still had something to say. So that's where the book came from, Who Taught You How to Be Broke.
I love it. That is absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I love the thought. Hey, like you said, somebody that you admire, you say, hey, there's a little space I can feel. And I must say, in my time following you, let me highlight on Society of Black Agents. That's where I was first met you at one of their events. And I think, and you are a member of Society of Black Agents. So I always want to shout them out. They support things that we've done, and we've done some things in coordination with them. So I'm glad to have met you. And again, you are, as people can hear right now, an incredibly dynamic, but it's clear that you love the space, and I'm glad that you're big up and left a little space for you to feel, and you are feeling it incredibly well. As a matter of fact, I'm going to highlight this one line from your book that everybody's, in a sense, heard, and I thought it was a good place to kind of start before we go to our, we got a few minutes before we go to our first initial break, so if we will keep these comments short, but this is something that anybody out there listening, if you're religious at all, then you've heard, and this is something that you highlighted in your book, Timothy 6:10, which says, for the love of money is the root of all evil. For the love of money is the root of all evil. I love that you highlighted that line in the beginning of your book, and we'll get more into how great I think this book is and how everybody should go out and get it. But I highlight that line when I was reading it because I have a great friend, one of my best friends, Mark Rangers, who's also in the financial space, and he's always highlighted that the misunderstanding of that verse, in his opinion, has led to a lot of money woes, in particular within the African-American community, that we look at money in a bad way because quite often people twist the line and change it to the love of money. Let me make sure I said that right. That money is the root of all evil versus understanding the love of money, if you will. But either way, Queen, that's just something that he says. I want to hear your thoughts on why you picked that line to kind of open your book with.
Well, I also say that people don't read the full scripture because it says for some. That for some. Some people can use it for evil. Some people will push themselves through woes. However, it is not applicable to everybody. And, yes, we do use a level of fear to be able to control a lot of people. So we say, typically, money is the root of all evil. Not even, they don't even say the love of money. They even took that part out of it. They just go for money is the root of all evil. No. It's these little cliches or these sound bites, these little bitty things that's messing up people financially because they only hear the part that feels like it's most applicable to them. However, there is another side of the story. There is a completion to that story, and that's what I want to be able to help people to get a better understanding, more clarity, that it's for some the love of money can cause a downfall. It can pierce them with sorrow, but not everyone. So really, it ain't even applicable to half the people that's listening. Have really decent, happy, good characters, and they are not going to use the money to do something evil or miss forward towards their community.
No,
but
I love
it.
I love it. All right, I'll give you a 30-second shot at your thought in knowing that she opened the book with that. What do you think about that verse, if you will? Ask just a quick little shot. We got to go to a break, and we'll continue the conversation after that.
Yeah, I think just going further into it, that's not the entire verse, and that fear factor that goes into money is spot on. So I'm looking forward to the conversation when we get into it.
Now, I love it. We'll be right back. Yeah, with our special guest, Evette Jones, special guest co-host Ashley Thomas, who taught you how to be broke. We'll be right back, where all I ask is that you think.
Do you simply want your taxes done this tax season, or do you prefer to have your taxes completed by a professional on top of current and constantly changing tax codes? If so, look no further than S-Kinds Accounting and Tax Services, where each year, plenty of satisfied customers from around the country return for an efficient and professional tax experience. For small businesses, S-Kinds Accounting and Tax not only provides bookkeeping and accounting on a monthly, quarterly, and or yearly basis, but S-Kinds Accounting and Tax goes above and beyond to provide yearly tax strategies to increase the bottom line, profits. While no one likes when Uncle Sam or the IRS comes knocking, know you're in good hands with S-Kinds Accounting and Tax. Call them today at 770-947-3667. Again, that's 770-947-3667, or email them at advice@thetaxcoach.com.
If you're still out there waiting to get your taxes done, S-Kinds Accounting and Tax, $50 off if you mention Mental Dialogue when you go to do business with them. So take advantage of that. $50 off just by simply mentioning that you heard the commercial here on Mental Dialogue. She can handle your taxes anywhere. We are a nationwide show, so definitely look them up and get your taxes done by a professional and make sure you're doing it with someone who's keeping up with all the latest, because a lot of times you return to people who are not always staying up to date, and that's what we want to make sure we give you people that you can depend on to do your taxes. With that said, this morning's discussion question, who taught you how to be broke? Special guest, David Jones, as well as special guest co-host, Ashley Thomas. You wrote the book, Who Taught You How to Be Broke? And so if you will, Queen, I wanted to highlight that, as I said, I love this book. The reason I love it, I wanted to highlight this. The reason I love it is because while there are bunches and bunches of financial books out there, I remember when I first got out of college, I remember I bought this real big financial book that was a money book, if you will, that's going to teach me everything about money. And the reality is my life got to going. I love to read, but I would read books of things that I already, in a sense, love. And I never picked up the book. So it's like I wasted my money on this big, thick book that was going to teach me everything about money. And I remember the fervor I had of saying, yeah, I'm going to buy that book so that I can be smart about money. And this was, like I say, first out of college. I was in the military, so I had a steady income coming up, if you will. But luckily, I did have a best friend that I mentioned, Mark Ranger, gave me some game, and a lot of that stuff has saved me over the years. But in particular, I never opened that thick-ass book. So the reason I love your book, because it literally, to be honest, it looks like a pamphlet, but it's the most important pamphlet I've seen on the subject. And since that time, I have read some books on money. Never did pick up that first book, let me stand by that. But I have read a lot of books, and I've been fortunate enough to have associates like Ashley, like Mark, that have taught me a lot. So I've learned more from kind of listening to them than even the reading of the books. But the thing about your book is, I think, one, anybody can read it. And then for me, it would be hard-pressed for someone not to read this book, I would say, in half a day, if that, and literally not pick up something or a seed that can help them, maybe not only with their own finances, but the way that you write this book, I think it makes people say, you know what, I want to ensure the next generation is taken care of, just because of things that you highlight, which we'll get into. But I just wanted to, again, just big up you on how simple the book is. And if you will, just get some mind, some thought process behind you choosing to do the book in this manner versus with all your knowledge, you could have wrote a much thicker book, and I know that just from getting to know you. But go ahead, Queen, just talk about why you simplified the book in such a way.
Because too often in the financial world, we talk over people's heads. We make up these big, elaborate words and schemes and everything that it makes it seem like, oh, wow, this is so out of reach. No, 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 no. It's really plain. It's very simple. And I believe a lot of times the things that you can be able to explain to a third grader, if you can't explain something to a third grader, then you don't know what you're talking about. You have to make it plain. It's something biblical. We say write the vision, make it plain. Helping people to understand what it is that they need to do with their money in a way that is most relatable to them allows them to take action easier, more efficiently. They don't feel like they're crippled by, oh, I've got to read some more. I've got to study some more. No, you need to put your money in the right bucket. And you said something that was just really made me laugh when you said it. Most times people spend more money on their books and all this financial education than they put inside their investment accounts. Make it make sense. See, that is a problem for me. So a lot of times when I'm looking at people who are telling me they're buying books and they're doing this and that and the other, and I ask them, well, what do you actually have saved? Well, I don't have anything saved. So you have essentially put money in a savings and investment account for all of these financial entertainers. Ooh. Financial entertainers, but yet you ain't got nothing to show for it. That was a huge problem. And I wanted to make it just plain language, like your good girlfriend, your auntie, your cousin down the street. If I'm going to say something to you, I'm going to say it to you in truth and in love. And I'm an Aries, so I'm kind of blunt and to the point.
I love it. Yeah, you're not going to miss words, waste a lot of time with fluff that doesn't get to the point. I love it. Real quick, if you don't mind, Ashley, I'll let you kind of respond to this because it'll be your first time hearing it. I actually want to share some of what's in the book. So I'm going to read this insert. So if y'all will, bear with me as I read from Who Taught You How to Be Broke, so people can hear, in a sense, that plain language. And I think there's a lot that can be pulled out of this initial chapter that is entitled, Who Taught You How to Be Broke? On page 8 of the book, you say, maybe you were told at 13 to do well in school so you can get a scholarship and go to college. But after graduation, you realize no one else used the last 5 years to save up money for you to go to college. Then you were told, well, you're just going to have to work to pay for college. So on top of going to class every day, you try to work part-time, but eventually take out student loans because it's impossible to work your way through college. You graduate only to learn afterwards, even with the degree, the jobs that could pay off the student loans aren't that easy to come by. Finally, you secure a position with a decent income. Now you can get the car you want, take the vacations you deserve, live the American dream, get married, buy a house, and have a couple of kids until one day you look up from your beautiful life and all you see are bills and debts. Between school and jobs, literally you have been working your ass off for the last 15 years. Around 30, you hear the words like investing, financial independence, and generational wealth. A light bulb goes off. Why in the hell didn't anyone teach me about this sooner? Ashley, I would love to hear your reactions to that insert from the book.
It's spot on. You know, I think that people kind of think that financial literacy, understanding money, is like this, there's some trick that they're not getting, and it's really simple. And if you kind of have to stay out of the rat race, right? Like that whole process that she talked about, it really is this pipeline to get you, you know, from school to school and really not have any idea. And like when people actually learn about finances, it's too late. And it's an important conversation that we have to be having with our children when they are younger, with our nieces, our nephews. Like, we have to be instilling those basics. And, like, it's spot on, because if you don't, you will fall into this trap where you look up and all you have is bills and a mountain of debt that you feel is impossible to get over.
Beautiful. Devette, your book, your thoughts on your own words.
Well, for me, it was a story that I heard 100 times over with all of the clients, everybody. I don't care if you were 65. I don't care if you was 25. I don't care if you were black. I don't care if you were white. I don't care if you were rich. I don't care if you were poor. Everybody almost had the same story. Mm-hmm. Everybody. The last time that they really, you know, it was what we call them, the silent generation, right before the baby boomers. Those were the last ones that actually learned about some level of financial education in school. They were, of course, and then again, they only had really savings accounts through the banks, but the banks were also paying good 5-6%, maybe even 14% if you take it back to the 80s, on CDs and savings accounts at the bank. they've had stuff like a penny saved is a penny earned. They had a level of financial education. They just kind of dropped off by the time that we got into the 70s and the 80s because people were too busy spending money to actually talk about money. They were too busy. If they were walking around with their money going down the street in cars or the wealth or looking at how big the house was or the parties, and that became a definition of wealth. However, it's not wealth. It's junk. And most people did not ever go back and figure out how did our parents or our grandparents build their wealth. They never had those conversations to realize. I talk about another chapter in the book, The Money Trees. In the early, I guess the late 60s, early 70s, especially for the black community, when we had affirmative action, it was really allowing people to start getting these good government jobs with benefits. Like, this was a time where people were making money hand over fist. All they had to do was get up, walk out the door, and get money. Something else is true. When our parents and our grandparents told us to go to college, well, their college education probably cost $3,000 for 4 years. It cost them $3,000 to get a whole degree, a PhD even, whereas it costs $3,000 a semester now. So the idea that they could just go and get a college education because they got this education and had this piece of paper could get a better job because they had a degree, well, that became a whole nother dynamic. They were working over the summer at the little five and dime store or at the little fountain, and they were just waiting tables over the weekend and made enough money to pay for their college education. It's a whole different financial environment. But because we didn't have those conversations to be able to apply what's the difference between now and then and what investments they had now and then and what type of jobs and benefits they had now and then, they stopped having those conversations. So we ended up being the ones that took the financial shortfall because we didn't know what we didn't know because we hadn't been there before.
No, that's big. You're so on point. And we've done plenty of shows, again, with Ashley and other financial experts coming on the show, and I'm glad to have you today. But just speaking of that, and this is kind of partly why I started with that excerpt from the book, is we've long talked about, really for a number of years, for those who don't know, we've been rocking this show for almost 8 years now, again, just trying to bring important conversations to our community. And we've continued to highlight, in a sense, the concept that specifically my generation, I'm 49, I always like to just kind of highlight to give some age range, but our generation was definitely hit with the go to school, go to college, get a good education, get a good job. Like, it was such a mantra that we now, over the years of doing this show, the financial experts that I've all brought on highlight how, kind of to your point, DeVette, there was a period where that was pretty valuable based on, like you said, the way finances were, with the way, like you said, the way interest you could earn, how much college costs. So there was a value in that message for a period of time, but unfortunately we ran the message too long and now we're paying the cost. And it's specifically in the African American community, when you look at the stats and the numbers, you see that even for those who are getting quote unquote valuable degrees to a degree, you see that African Americans, based on historically where we've been financially, they may graduate college with even more debt than their peer who has that same degree. So it's still a different starting point, even though you've gotten one of the degrees that still holds values. You know, we always have the dialogues about degrees that are not necessarily as financially capable of even returning what you pay for the degree. So that those nuances get talked about today or whatever. But ultimately, we highlight, we were told that message for so long, and now we admit for too long. So now that's why we have these conversations. Ashley, any thoughts on, that messaging lasting too long and what we need to be saying to this next generation? Because I don't know if we've completely captured the message in the best way. I think she does very well in this book as we get into more comments from the book, but your thoughts on just that messaging being told to us for too long?
It's still going on. You know, people are still flocking to college and trying to find ways to, because, you know, the reality is that in the job market, it hasn't changed its requirement for advanced degrees. So that narrative is going to continue until we start seeing these companies recognize, they're like, oh, well, someone not having a degree does not mean that they're not capable of doing this work, right? And I know that's a tangent for where things are headed with baby boomers and all of this, you know, the shift happening in the job market, but the narrative is still going on. And what we have to change is the education that we're providing to our children and the knowledge that we have for ourselves so that we can share it with them so that as they're going through these situations, they can begin to think about a shift in, like, what that looks like. You know, for me, I have my undergrad in linguistics, and, like, what have I done with that? Nothing. Luckily, my master's is in financial planning, but still, when I think about my undergrad and, like, how much I took out in student loans and that entire process, it would have been so much better for me to be thinking about other ways that I could be strategic with my degree so that I could use that to earn money, or I could have used the money that I earned in college in a way to make it work for me and potentially be ahead of the game in terms of my student loans, or even building wealth earlier than I am right now.
I love it. And here's what happens a lot, and I'll get you to talk about this because, again, you mentioned this in the book. So when to a degree, like, I agree with you, Ashley, that to a degree that messaging still exists, right, for a lot of people, and people get caught in that rat race, if you will, and there's all the dialogue about, you know, how expensive college is and is it worth it and that kind of stuff. And people are hopefully now, at least if they're still getting told that message, they are doing what you just mentioned, right, Ashley, the idea of let me make sure this makes sense as
right.
far as what degree I get or whatever. And then we're starting to now properly tell some people, hey, college ain't for everybody, and there's all these different certifications.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that are starting to get intermixed in the message to the next generation's favor, right? Here's one thing that was happening before I would say as language has now gotten a little more savvy, I think we're giving some better messaging to the next generation. But there was a period of time right before now, I would say about 5 years ago, where we overcorrected with the idea of, once you started, you know, recognizing college wasn't going to get you all the money that you thought it was going to get you, we overcorrected for a period, and we had a period where everybody in the community, not everybody, I'm just exaggerating a little bit, but you always kept hearing, everybody needs to have their own, Quit going to these jobs. We don't need college. Everybody needs to have their own business. And so we have had incredible entrepreneurs and consultants come on this show to explain entrepreneurship is really for a specific group. It's a specific skill.
Yeah.
Because people were overstating it and almost was going to turn the go to school, get a good job, and you'll be fine. They were going to overcompensate and now inundate everybody with you need to have your own. And people are still doing that, right? That is still happening or whatever. But that literally is a small percentage of the entire United States, not just the black community, that is actually skillful at a very difficult thing to do, which is to become an entrepreneur. Devette, however, you have this title of this one chapter called The CEO Mindset, and it specifically gets into how you can be the CEO of your finances and your families. If you could just give me some thoughts on that, because you see what I'm trying to do here? I'm trying to make a distinction. You can be the CEO in this way that you write in this book, but it's very different than people out here just telling everybody, you need to have your own business. That, again, does not serve the majority, in my opinion. But your thoughts about being a CEO of your own finances and family.
Well, the number one thing that I need you to understand is we all do run a business. It's called our household. So before we try to go out here and run any other business and try to serve any other community, we have to make sure that we take care of ourselves. And that's why I say in that chapter, you are the CEO of a company called YOU, you. That company, you have to manage the budget. You have to deal with the logistics. You have to handle the facilities. You have to handle all of the insurance. You have to handle all of the taxes. You are the CEO of you. So you've got to be able to manage it within your own household, within your own family structure, and your sub-corporation called KIDS, kids. That sub-corporation was already a bad investment. Yes, kids are a bad investment because we pour a whole lot of money into them thinking that they are going to be the future, and yet we never really taught them how to manage a business, manage the household. I remember when I was younger, I would occasionally come in and see my mom had a budget written out on an envelope. I ain't even going to say it was a, you know, an Excel spreadsheet or anything like that. It was an envelope just going through and looking at the money. And that was one of the first times that I ever looked over and was like, that's how much money you make? Oh, that's how much stuff costs. Oh, got it. Let me quit begging and asking for stuff. Now I see why you're working for overtime. Now I see why, you know, you out here doing side hustles, making an extra money. Being able to have that experience at a young age, most people don't get to see their parents' budgets. They don't even know how much money their parents make. They just assume based on the way that people spend. The other dynamic of it is if you are going into, they say I have a very charmed lifestyle. I am very charmed from birth. I've been raised around millionaires. Not that I was a millionaire or my family was a millionaire in particular. I always say that I grew up with a silver spoon in my mouth, but we were eating on paper plates. Meaning that there were really great experiences and people who were around me that I was able to watch and learn and study, kind of like the Napoleon Hill, being able to be around all of these wealthy people. I watched them go through shortfalls. I watched them get up and work 30-hour days. I know it's only 24 hours in a day. Y'all know what I'm saying. I watched them I watched them go out here and have to suffer and struggle. And those things from watching entrepreneurs, I even talk about it in the book. My first financial advisor that I worked for 12 and a half years, top of the table, million-dollar round table, she is top tier of financial planning, and I don't mean in my city, I don't mean in my state, I mean in the country, top tier. This woman would bring the same funky-ass tuna fish sandwich to lunch every single day and sit there and eat it at her desk. We had a beautiful office that was on the main drag of one of the biggest streets in the city. There were restaurants at a stone's throw. Everywhere you looked, you had a Fuddruckers, you had a Panera's, you had an Applebee's, you had Nama's, you had all these different restaurants up and down the street, and she was bringing that same tuna fish sandwich from work every day and eating it at the office. She was not going to give her money to all of the different restaurants up and down on the street. How do you keep wealth? How do you maintain wealth if you're constantly giving your money, your power, to your wealth to somebody else?
That's
so
crazy.
That helped me to be able to start seeing the little things that they did that preserved wealth. I mean, you talk about Groupons and coupons and even the seminars, the financial seminars that we would do.
And let me jump in
before
we got to go to a break. Yeah, we got to go to a break. I'm pretty sure. Now, you're good. I'm pretty sure Ashley is eating up to highlight, especially when it comes to spending money at restaurants. That's one of her pet peeves for all of us that waste our money on that. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. We're going to let all of you callers, y'all, start getting in with our guests. I wanted to kind of give a little backdrop before we open it up for questions. The number to get in is 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 if you want to speak this morning. We'll be right back, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you gotta try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wine. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet, like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure, that's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay, now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
You talk about life insurance. If you can't do anything else, you need to get life insurance, because all you are doing is perpetuating the cycle of brokenness and not having enough and a scarcity mindset in our community. If you can afford to go get some scratch offs a couple of times a month, if you can eat out a couple of times a month, then you can look into a term policy for enough to make sure that your house gets paid off, that your car gets paid off, because Once you pass away, those obligations fall to your family to try to secure, to make sure that everything keeps going the way that it should. And if we are not taking care of those things, if we are not making sure that the house is paid off once you pass away, or that the only car that our house uses is paid off and is titled correctly, you set it up that your kids, your husband, your partner, whoever, now they're having to repeat the exact same cycle that you were going through because there was no protection. Life insurance for our community should not be optional. It should not be we're just relying on the ones that we have at work. That's sick. I'm happy that it's available for you. But in order for us to move forward as a community, one, not only do we have to keep having these conversations, but two, it should be a requirement that we have for each other, a standard that we are holding each other to get life insurance.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas. As you hear a passionate cut that we quite often play on this show, Ashley was going off about our community needing to have insurance, no more GoFundMes when people pass away. But again, there's a lot more to insurance than a lot of people, a lot of us misunderstand and debate. So absolutely, our special guest loves to speak about insurance as well. So if you will, Queen, as you hear Ashley's passionate request that we make it a standard of requirement in our community, I would love to hear your thoughts on Ashley's thoughts about insurance, if you will, Queen.
She's 100% correct. Next question. No, I'm serious. and I say that in the respect of, yes, like if that's the easiest, simplest thing for you to do is to get life insured, so let me tell my story. So today happens to be my mother's birthday. I started in this business in July of 2002. And by April of 2003, my mother fell dead. Now, mind you, I had already started in this industry and started learning about life insurance and Roth IRAs and taxes and Social Security. And to my mama, I came home and found my mother on the bathroom floor dead. It changed something for me because I didn't know how we were going to pay the bills. I didn't know how we were going to keep up the car note. I didn't know how we were going to keep up the mortgage. Again, I just told you, I just got this job less than 7-8 months ago, and you know how jobs are. You hear one day, you go on the next. But because there was life insurance, we were able to make sure that we kept up all the regular household expenses. We were able to put money aside for my children and their college education. We didn't have to go through a financial shortfall. We didn't have to suffer. We were able to take time off to grieve. We were able to do the different things that we needed to make the transition a whole lot easier for us because there was life insurance. Not just enough life insurance to do the burial, because that's what we usually just say, I want to get $10,000, $15,000 to put us in the ground. No, there was legacy money, money to actually be able to take care of my grandfather when he was in the nursing home, because we know how expensive nursing homes and home health care is. There was money for that. And being able to say that money, it doesn't control our lives, but it made our lives a lot easier. So I then turned around, and within another 5 months of my mom's passing, I got my life insurance license in August of 2003, because I absolutely knew I used this in my lifetime, something so near and dear to me. I don't like life insurance. I love life insurance. It literally saved my life. Life insurance is for the people that you love. It's for the people who come behind you. So it gives us an opportunity to be able to step up to another level, another proportion that'll keep us from having to start over from ground zero.
No, absolutely. When I think of your title, Who Taught You How to Be Broke, and the idea that this kind of is still a consideration, or I don't know if I can afford it, is a way of being taught to be broke, whether you recognize it or not, in a sense that that it's not a foundational piece, especially if you're not coming from money and set some other way. Because, again, it's not the only way. I want to be clear about that. But for the general population that's still, half the country still struggles with a $1,000 emergency, if you will. So, again, this is not just a Black community thing. It's an American consumer thing. And so the last place that the majority of us need to be is in a space of not understanding that life insurance can't, that it can do just what it did for our special guest. Ashley, I know you love this subject as well, so please jump in. For the callers out there, if y'all want to get in, please press 1. We will let you jump in and make your comments or ask your questions. Go ahead, Ashley.
Yeah, you know, I'm always going to ride for life insurance because life insurance is something that we can't afford not to have. And to Devette's point, like, it can't just be those burial expenses that a lot of people focus on. I did a seminar for a church, and everyone was like, oh, well, I thought life insurance was just to put you in the ground. Absolutely not. I try to have people think about when you pass away, if you pass away unexpectedly, is your child's life going to be negatively impacted because you don't have that support, right? People think about like, oh, I need to have a guardian or someone that's going to look after my child, even if it's the other parent. And without having life insurance, everyone's quality, their standard of living is going to change. Why would you put that on your family when you could do something about it right now? And yes, whole life might be a little bit too expensive for you, but term for most people is generally very affordable. And the sooner that you get it, the cheaper, that's the cheapest it's going to be, right? Because it's only going to go up. This is an investment that we have to make into ourselves, that we have to make into our families, that we have to make into our communities, because when you have that money set up where, oh, this is going to cover the house, this is going to cover the car, this is going to cover these expenses, all of these things are taken care of, like, how different does life look? That's what we're looking for, making things different, not doing the same old thing. If your parents didn't have life insurance, that's a reason for you to have it because they probably needed it. It probably would have made things different for you. And so life insurance, again, is not optional for us. Like, we cannot afford to not have life insurance in our community because we're all going to pass away. That's something that's going to happen for every single one of us. And so having those things in place, make sure that people aren't worried or stressed out about things in addition to mourning you, right? Like, this is something that's happening in the process of you grieving and trying to plan the funeral and trying to get things sorted out. Why would you even want to worry about your money in that time? Yeah.
I love it. I mean, the thing that pops in my head is that old saying when I used to hear it all the time when I was young. All thing I got to do is stay black and die. Like you say, we gonna die. The only thing I got to do is stay black and die. Now, my little smart, elegant ass, I used to say this, and DeVette, I know you'll probably appreciate this. I used to always say, and pay your taxes. Congress gonna get their money. So you got to stay black and die and pay your taxes. We actually got a caller that want to jump in. So, DeVette, you want to give a quick response to that, or should I go to the caller? It's up to you, Corey.
I just wanted to say that we probably need to start looking at, this is a mindset shift. I need us to start buying life insurance policies on our kids when they're born. 2 weeks old is the earliest you can buy a life insurance policy. And I think it needs to be a whole life policy, right? Because I have 2 whole life policies on my 2 3-year-old granddaughters, and they both, that's $50,000 a piece, and it costs me $33 a month. That policy will stay two $16 policies, which is $33 a month, is going to stay the premium forever for the rest of their lives. Exactly. I need us to go back and do the math on that. Where do you spend $33? We spend $33 at Applebee's. We spend $33 on just getting a polish change. We spend $33 on a car wash. Why are we not putting that into what will, for me and my family, end up being $100,000 of generational wealth for my grandchildren's grandchildren? Not me. I don't want to see that money. So I definitely love the idea of being able to put life insurance on our children before their insurability changes, because I did have a 16-year-old child who is now considered uninsurable. So I have to encourage people to start getting on the babies while they're immediately born, so that way they will know that they're going to have something that's going to be in effect for the rest of their lives. And, yes, I also have a term life insurance policy, too. Hell.
Oh, yeah, definitely different ways to play with it. I love you putting that idea out there, because I am such an advocate of reminding people, of telling people, yes, get this insurance on these babies. It works the same as it does for adults, but it's the cheapest it's ever going to be. It's so simple, and I hope somebody just got that seed that you just dropped. We're actually up against the break, so 609 last 3891. I will get you coming out of this next break. We'll be right back. Well, all I ask is that you think.
Have you heard the adage that a picture is worth a thousand words? Well, meet Livy Blue Photography, a premier company specializing in capturing your family portraits and turning them into wall art that stands the test of time. One visit to their website, livyblue.com, and you will immediately be blown away by the experience as you peruse their gallery. The lead photographer, Jalivia Northern, is a published photographer with over 10 years of experience in capturing families, weddings, and school senior portraits. If you want a breathtaking photography experience, contact Livy Blue Photography at livyblue.com. That's LIVIBLUE.com. Are you intimidated by money? While this is a question most people never think to ask themselves, but when forced to think about it, many people realize they have unrecognized fears that truly affect how they deal with money. If you want to learn more about money and the fears that keep you from prosperity, join us for Making Money Matter Mondays, where money meets mental health with personal finance coach Ashley Thomas and psychotherapist Dr. Katrina Pitt. Every second Monday of the month, find out if you're intimidated by money and what to do about it. To receive a link to this free Zoom event, please DM the Making Money Matter or the Mental Dialogue Instagram pages or contact 404-604-9477.
Welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas, who taught you how to be broke, is our discussion question featuring special guest Yvette Jones. Before we get to the caller real quick, Ashley, if you could highlight Monday nights, Making Money Matter Mondays. Thank you, Queen, for putting that on. You and Dr. Pittman put on an excellent conversation every second Monday of the month where money and mental health meet. So if you could highlight, I think Monday is actually a continuation of today's discussion, if you will. But go ahead and quick highlight that before we go to the caller.
Absolutely. So this Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we are going to have William Hunter on. He is an estate attorney. So we will be continuing this conversation, the things that you need to understand, the basic things that you need to have together for your estate, even titling for your properties, for your car, so that when you pass away, they're passing on to the people that you want them to. This is a conversation that you don't want to miss. I understand that these conversations can be very uncomfortable and, you know, sometimes they can bring up some fear, but it's a necessary conversation. And once you get these things in place, it's all about maintaining it. So I hope that you'll join us on Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a free Zoom call regarding estate planning.
Yep. Tell them where they can follow you, because you can DM Ashley or myself to get access to the link on Monday. It's a free, thanks to our sponsors, this is a free Zoom we do every second Monday. But let them know, I know we're going to let you go in a second. Go ahead and tell people now while we're talking about it, how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, so you can follow me and reach me at Making Money Matter LLC on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok.
Absolutely. You can go to mentaldialogue.com and contact me there as well. Just DM us on our social media. Just let us know that you want the link and we'll send the link to you. Let's go to our caller, 609 last 3891. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and give us your 3 cent or a question on this morning's discussion question.
Good morning, Montel and sisters. This is Marilyn calling.
Mm-hmm. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. This issue of, I'm calling it financial security for the family, it is so important. It is so important. I remember in my family, I wanted to get together for a family meeting to discuss these types of things and for people to plan their funeral, if you will, so the family will know everything we needed to know. Know where the insurance policies are, which can be a big problem, mm-hmm. and know just that that's the best investment you can have. That's an investment everybody can can put their hands on. You know, we talk about the stock market, we talk about crypto and all the things that are convoluted and confusing, but life insurance is your best, the most simplest, the most rewarding ROI that a person can do. I love the idea.
You gotta say it, girl.
2 weeks after the baby's born, to take out that life insurance policy. I have a friend where on her mother's birthday, every year on her mother's birthday, she would increase her mother's policy. Okay? So when her mother passed, she didn't have a thing to worry about for the rest of her life or her children's life, because every year she would increase the policy on her mom. We have to understand this and make it simple for people. I hear the author saying that if you can't explain it to a three-year-old, you don't know what you're talking about. And this is so simple. It is so simple. So, you know, don't get your nails done once a month. Don't get the weave done once a month. Don't do Starbucks a couple of times a month. But get that insurance policy and start with a term policy and then bump it up to a whole life policy when you can afford to do that. But get in the game. You know, get in the game. And college, I have a lot to say about college. You know, we talk about going to school and doing well and going to college and get that degree and get that resume. But instead of coming out with a resume, come out with a business plan. Come out with the family putting money together for a business plan. Because when you come out with all that debt, still need experience, they're going to tell you before they're going to hire you, if they're going to hire you. You know, if your hair is not right, if your name is difficult to pronounce, they're not going to hire you. So you have all this debt and no way to pay it. You know, and that's part of the ills of our community. Being so in debt, it's overwhelming that it just freaks us out. So we're going to have to do things different. My 23 is let's change the narrative. Let's change the narrative on so many things that we regurgitate that really just don't make sense.
Amen.
Love it. An amazing 3 cents. Yeah. Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you once again for your 3 cents. Definitely appreciate it. For anybody out there listening, I see some people, a lot of people on the line. If you're just listening via the phone, no problem. If you are trying to get in, especially for first-time callers, they're usually, this is different from most radio shows. You do have to press one, and we'll let you speak. She said a mouthful there. I love everything she's saying. I love the ideas that are just kind of popping out as we're having this a beautiful dialogue about, let's, you know, make this clear for anybody that's just now tuned in. Who taught you how to be broke? Yvette Jones is our 20-year financial advisor veteran, if you will, but she also wrote the book, How to Be Broke. And so speaking of books, I also want to say thank you specifically, Queen, for helping assist me with getting my first book out, because I actually want to share an actual piece from my upcoming book, Re-Education of Negroes. We tackle some economic stuff for our community, I think specifically to what I call, matter of fact, this is a perfect segue from what Marilyn just called in. It's just the idea of the narrative, which is a mindset, which is what you consistently speak to. So one, I want to thank you for helping me get my book, which drops next Friday, March 17th, and I wanted to read a little short piece out of the book. I don't know if you read this piece, Queen. You actually purchased my book first, and I know you've read through it, but I wanted to share this one piece and have y'all answer these discussion questions for anybody who hasn't heard. Most of my listeners have heard this. My book is a book where it's just set up short commentaries with discussion questions. It's designed to create dialogues like we do here every Saturday on this show. So I'm going to share this piece called Black Socrates Speaks, Life Over Money. And this piece starts says, why is this even a question? But every day we listen to rappers put money over everything. Chasing money, at best, you'll be rich. Unfortunately, rich can be gone tomorrow. Wealth is health. And we should understand money is a tool to live as abundantly as we desire. By the way, struggling without money is also choosing money over life. The lack of money creates the same evils as the love of money. So what's your first reaction to that short commentary out of my book, Devette? Again, thank you for helping me get this book out on March 17th. Your thoughts, Queen.
It's my pleasure. I'm very honored to be able to be helping you with the book as well as to be the first purchaser of the book. So, you know, I'm already going to go to the first thing that I heard you say it, and you know it's a trigger for me. Your health is your wealth.
No, that one is actually, I'll cut you off because it actually says wealth is health. So that's actually, I just want to be clear in that piece. I wrote it opposite of that.
Whatever.
I got to add that clarity. Yeah, but you can speak on that too, but just know that actually says the opposite.
And you know what? I know it's not even the main question.
Go ahead and jump in and put it out there because it's very smart for you to say this. Go ahead, Queen. Go ahead.
You really did hit on it, the spot where you say that, you know, there are a lot of people with great health and don't have any money. You know, that it creates the same ills. Not having money creates the same ills of having money if you are in the wrong mindset. So I definitely agree with your commentary. I just wanted to pick at you a little bit. But the reality of it is money is not everything, but it is up there next to oxygen.
I love it. I love it. So here we go. Real quick, I got a couple of questions. I'm going to have you and Ashley answer these questions again. So the way the book is set up, it's a commentary with discussion questions. And so the first question is, what dollar amount of wealth would you consider someone rich versus wealthy? Devette, I'll let you go ahead and jump back in on that question.
When you're able to have about 20 times your income saved up. So it's not a dollar amount. It's basically how much money you need to live off of. If you can have 20 times your income saved up, and you can, then you are technically rich because you do not have to worry about it. Now, if your income is $1,000 a month and you have 20 times that, you're rich. If your income is $50,000 a year and you have 20 times that saved up, you're rich. That's my answer.
Sounds good. I'll ask you that same question. Ashley, again, you are in the finance space as well as a financial coach and amongst other things. But what dollar amount of wealth would you consider someone rich versus wealthy? Your thoughts on that, Ashley?
So I agree with Devette. I don't think that there is a dollar amount per se. When I think about it, I would say someone that's rich, they have more than enough money. But when I think about wealth, I think about I'm taken care of, my kids are taken care of, their kids are taken care of. It is well beyond me that can live off of this money, and my money is working to make me more money. And, like, you can have that being rich, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you are planning for that to go generation to generation.
No, absolutely. And that was part of the challenge of, again, the piece is not for people to agree. The pieces are not for you to agree or disagree with me. It's to create these dialogues. And that was part of me even playing with the word rich and wealthy, because I know as a child, you think of the idea of I want to get rich. And I think we see that displayed within the culture, you know, highlighting the rappers, if you will, that to a degree we often think rich is enough. But like you just said, Ashley, wealthy makes you think further and beyond not only yourself, but what does that really look like? How does your money make money? Whereas riches, you know, do I have enough money to buy these expensive things? So it was just kind of a challenge to the community to think about rich and wealthy in a different way. The second question, if you will, we'll go back to you, Devette. Do you believe most wealthy people do evil things to get wealthy? And if so, do you think these thoughts limit you in your own pursuit of financial success? If you will, Queen, your thoughts on that.
Yes, I do. I do. And the reason why I say that is because I've been around enough of them. And it's not just necessarily evil. It's evil compared to what we as a poor black people have as a standard. So when you have a level of morality and you're like, oh, I wouldn't do this or I wouldn't say that, even when we think about traditional marriage, well, this should be the dynamic in some communities. Yes, that is the dynamic. In the other communities, no, it's a whole nother dynamic. So is it technically evil? No. Is it contrary to what somebody else would do? Absolutely. Will they take more risk? Absolutely. Will they look at using their resources to be able to manipulate and influence so they can be able to gain more money? Absolutely. Is it wrong? Not necessarily. It's wrong to some people. Does it get the job done? Absolutely. Is everybody going to implement that strategy? Nope, not at all. But the reality of it, based on your question, do they do things that are quote-unquote evil? Evil is different in a lot of different people's eyes. So, yes.
I respect. Let me ask you real quick before I go to Ashley. What is your thought on the second part of that question? That if people do feel like they mostly do evil, do you think it limits individuals' thoughts on becoming successful? Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, if you just believe that everybody rich does things bad, will that also in turn limit your thinking of I should get rich or I can get rich because you're thinking all they do is bad things? Any thoughts on that, real quick?
Again, it's not that they're doing bad things. It's bad things to you. For somebody else, it may be absolutely normal. So I have to go back to even right now. And right now, we're in a real sticky situation. This particular generation, you know, we talk bad about the baby boomers and everybody else. We're in this real particular sticky situation right now where everybody's a scam artist. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a scam artist. Well, it's the guy that just... was going to prison for 5 years for doing a cable scam.
Yeah, hell
right. Care. Well, I remember back in the 80s, our parents had the little cable boxes, and they were stealing cables back in the 80s so we could watch HBO and watch the boxes. I remember that. But now it's a multi-million dollar, like, that's what I mean by some things are considered when it happens to us or we need it for our benefit, it's not necessarily evil or it's not necessarily wrong. But then when somebody actually gets wealthy off of doing the exact same thing and running these scams, because the scam was that he was basically repackaging some cable products that basically came from these different companies and selling them as though they were his, if I understood it correctly. Well, right. That's where the evil, that's where the wrong came from. But then we think and look at all the monopolies that we have where we talk about the big food corporations where you have Pepsi Company that runs Johnson & Johnson and runs this company and that company and all of them feed back through this pipeline. Why? So they can make the most money. Again, your question, you just asked the wrong person that question, dear. I'm sorry. Because
there's no wrong question. It's for people to think about it and have it. Again, there's no right and wrong.
But you get where I'm coming from. It's like, yes,
but way,
everything
is
going to be
fine.
Respective to a person's situation.
That's fine. And I say, there's no right or wrong. I'm saying the book is not a right or wrong book. It's a book of having open dialogue. With that said, we are at the top of the hour, actually past the hour by accident. No, Ashley, you have to go. So if you will, Queen, let them know how they can stay in contact with you once again for anybody that just may tuned in. We're going to go to break and be right back with this morning's discussion question. Who taught you how to be broke? Let them know how to stay in contact with you, Ashley.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I enjoy the conversation as always. Y'all can follow me, reach me at Making Money Matter LLC, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and you can go to my website, www.makingmoney.org, or you can email me at makingmoneymatter@gmail.com.
Thank you. We'll be right back. All I ask is that you think.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustler.
Basically, the concept was...
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes. And I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk. They still know it's me. Cause I look like money, smell like money.
Truth Seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the Connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetups, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, who taught you how to be broke? Our special guest is Devette Jones, author of the book, Who Taught You How to Be Broke? Real quick, Devette, I would love for you, if you don't mind, we've gotten connected. You're helping me put out my book, Reeducation of the Negro. Love talking about your book today. But if you will, I'll just highlight it real quick for maybe first-time listeners. We're not just a talk show. We dialogue and connect is literally what we do best as a community club. So we're more than a talk show, if you will. And I recently started saying that what we ultimately are is we are a premium referral service masquerading as a community group, if you will. And so you've even had an opportunity to connect with one of our members. I'm supposed to be connecting you with another member, referring another member to you this week. But if you don't mind just highlighting just you've been able to witness firsthand what our club does and that it's not just the show. So if you don't mind putting you on the spot, but just highlighting being able to connect with, you know, some of our members as well.
Absolutely. So, yes, I believe what you're doing in the community is phenomenal because so often people don't have resources. They don't know who to ask, and they don't have, you know, you can go and buy a book, but the book is going to just basically give you a tidbit of the information. Being able to connect with people one-on-one, you can be able to see their experiences. You can be able to find out what their thoughts are. You can speak with them individually, and that was really awesome to be able to have the meeting of the minds, being able to know how to take your situation to the next level without you having to start from ground zero. It is so important for us to work with professionals and different advisors in different areas. I'm a true believer that you need to be a master of your craft, and anybody else who's doing something, then you need to lean on them for their guidance and their leadership. One, because most of us, we have licenses where we have to study and do continuing education and stay on top of things. And the average person is never going to be able to do that. It doesn't matter if it's finance. It doesn't matter if it's health. It doesn't matter what the situation is. You need to have someone who is a professional in that lane. So what you bring with the community is an opportunity for you to touch and connect with people who know something about what it is that you need to know about, and they can help propel you forward. So, again, the community is like, you want to go far, go alone. If you want to go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. That community says that when we work together, we grow and we have a support system to stand on. So kudos to you on your group. It definitely does create value.
No, thank you. I definitely appreciate that. Anybody out there interested in becoming a neighbor, as I like to call it, go to mentaldialogue.com. There's different levels. If you're a business owner, definitely highlight the platinum and black level memberships, as we have our exclusive events and exclusive conversations with those levels as well. If you're outside of Atlanta, definitely still consider becoming a supporter. One, you're keeping Intelligent Radio on the air. And we connect people live on the air. We've done it plenty of times where we've connected people who've done business together and gotten government contracts. And basically, as she said, we elevate. I always think of it as the way we used to build a cake back in the old South. Not build a cake, but make a cake. My grandma might send me out to the neighbor to get the eggs and then send me to the other neighbor on the other side to get the milk. You know what I mean? And she make the cake, and all now three houses got a cake. So that's kind of how I look at what we're doing with the Mental Dialogue Community Club. But to get back into your book, you have a chapter called Pay Yourself First, or as you write it, Pay Your Damn Self First. And so I wanted to read a couple of cuts and just kind of have you expound on them as well, or a couple of excerpts, I should say, have you expound on them. But you say, you are not your car note. You are not your mortgage. You are not this sub-corporation you call kids. Self-preservation is a basic human instinct, except when it comes to your money. Most people save what's left over after bills and discretionary spending. And then you know, one more cut, and then I'll have you jump in. You say, do you know why SSI and taxes are taken out of your paychecks before you get it? It's because the government doesn't trust you. Now let's do a self-evaluation. Okay. I'm sorry?
I said they sure don't.
I got you. It says, how did that statement make you feel? Did you get tense or defensive? Are you big mad? Good. That's why the government doesn't trust you. You're too emotional. And we spend based on our feelings. Ever heard of retail therapy? Please jump in, Queen.
Yes, pay yourself first. Pay yourself often and pay yourself well, baby. Ooh, you deserve it. And just like I said before, your money is your power. Quit giving away your power. I think I say it a little further in the book or the chapter even where it says we got to quit spending our money like it's got an expiration date. Like it's going to go bad like milk. Like we cannot wait to get the money out of our pockets. We got to be able to get comfortable with money, 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 money. We ain't even comfortable with the word money, let alone keeping it, preserving it, growing it, watching it, studying it. So pay yourself first is basically the premise of the same way that most people, that one of their biggest assets outside of their home is their 401k plan if they have one. And the only reason why most people have a 401k is because they take it out of your paycheck before you get paid. They literally take 5, 10, whatever percent out of your paycheck, and then they give you your paycheck. That is the only reason why most people still have money in their 401k. Now, take that same premise, take that same discipline, and do it on the outside. Pay yourself first. Because when they take money out of your paycheck, they don't care about your groceries. They don't care about your house note. They don't care about your daycare. They don't care about anything. They just say, take that money out and put it over there first. We got to have that same mentality. Your corporation, the CEO of you says, let me pay myself. Put that into my investment accounts. Buy my life insurance. Buy my annuities, my retirement accounts. Buy my Roth IRAs. Buy my disability life insurance. Put my money into a brokerage account. Buy my stocks. Do all of these different things before you get out here and start spending money that you'll never see again. We keep calling everything that we spend money on an investment, and they do not have any rate of return. Your actual investments are monies that actually make you money. They are growing for you. You see that bit getting bigger every day. Most people, only thing they see getting bigger every day is their waistline. So we need to be able to start putting our money first, paying ourselves first, if we want to see our bank accounts getting bigger, if we want to see our financial future getting bigger. A lot of times people will take any pay raises and increases, and they'll turn around and they just insert those back into the lifestyle. They just start buying more stuff because they got more money. No, pay yourself first, damn it.
Well, makes sense. Matter of fact, I started getting into some specifics, so, you know, for as much as we can. So, for example, in that same chapter, as you did, you mentioned that we spend our money like an expiration date, but before you, I'm looking at the actual paragraph, and you, the first line in the paragraph, and I wanted to start here, says, this pay yourself first account should be earning 2-4% annually interest to create more little dollars for you. So what does that look like for somebody who may be listening and saying, okay, I like a lot of what she's saying. I would like to change my mindset, but put in perspective that even that 2-4%, what might that look like if I'm, you know, I'll go back to when I was coming out of college. Like I say, fortunately, I would have had a best friend to do exactly what I'm asking you to do now. But what does that look like? For me, I just finished school or I got my first job and I'm getting a little money and I want to decide to listen to the vet and pay myself first. Where does a 2-4%, where do I even put my money to even do that, the vet? What does that look like to you?
Okay, so first of all, this book was written in 2017. Mm-hmm. So we are also talking about a different financial environment because we are now post-pandemic. And we're going through a huge market crash. We're going through a crypto crash. We just had a Silicon Valley bank to crash, to actually shutter its doors only about 48, 72 hours ago. Yes, a bank failed. We ain't had a bank fail since 2008. We're in a different economic market. So typically in 2016, 2017, when I was putting together the thoughts for this book, then you could look at an investment, you could look at a CD at a bank and be able to get that type of rate of return. Mm-hmm. CD at the banks aren't paying that right now.
No, they're not.
So you really do need to, So being able to talk, like you said, you had a financial professional. You need to talk with a financial professional to figure out what it is that you need to be putting your money in. Now, you know that there's something I have called the 7 accounts that every adult should have. And the reason why there's 7 different accounts is because these are all the different things that affect a person's financial lifestyle. And because of that, you, as a client, get to tell me which one is the most important to you. So number one is always your checking and savings account.
We'll do this real quick because that way I take care of my sponsors and we'll come back with those 7 accounts. Because I love this. I love when you do this. So for everybody that's listening, stay tuned. We'll go through a quick cut. Got to take care of my sponsors. If y'all don't want so many commercials, go to MentalDialogue.com and become a member. I'll be right back. We're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Do you simply want your taxes done this tax season? Or do you prefer to have your taxes completed by a professional on top of current and constantly changing tax codes? If so, look no further than S-Kinds Accounting and Tax Services, where each year, plenty of satisfied customers from around the country return for an efficient and professional tax experience. For small businesses, S-Kinds Accounting and Tax not only provides bookkeeping and accounting on a monthly, quarterly, and or yearly basis, but S-Kinds Accounting and Tax goes above and beyond to provide yearly tax strategies to increase the bottom line, profits. While no one likes when Uncle Sam or the IRS comes knocking, know you're in good hands with S-Kinds Accounting and Tax. Call them today at 770-947-3667. Again, that's 770-947-3667 or email them at advice@thetaxcoach.com.
Welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. Again, S-Kinds Accounting and Taxes, $50 off. If you just mention Mental Dialogue for your taxes, make sure you call them. They are experts in this field. Their reviews are amazing. Go look them up. This morning's discussion question, who taught you how to be broke? Our special guest, DeVette Jones. If you will, DeVette, please jump into these. Now we're into nuts and bolts, the actual how-to. So, yes, if you will, tell them about, I think you said, what did you say, the 7 accounts, or explain it again, but how, whatever, call it, but I'll lay that out for anybody out there listening. Go ahead, Queen.
Absolutely. So there's 7 accounts that I believe every adult should have. Number one, you're going to have your checking and savings accounts. You're going to have your accounts at the bank. Now, these accounts are basically monies that you're going to use in the next 12 months. And these accounts have very little risk, so they have very little reward. So when we think about the stock market, we've always been told the lie, propaganda lie, about the stock market giving 12, 20% rate of return, and the banks usually only give something between a 1, 2% rate of return. The banks are not as risky as the stock market, so that's why you don't get as much growth. However, you don't take as much risk when you actually need to use the money, because you put that money in a stock market account and you go to pull it out a year from now, that account has the risk of being less than what you put into it. So we'll start off with those are kind of your safe accounts, your checking and savings accounts, money that need to be used in 12 months. Number two is a Roth IRA. Now, Roth IRA, I believe, is the premier retirement account. It's my number three investment, but it is one of the premier retirement accounts, and I believe that we should set up Roth IRAs on kids as soon as they get their first job. So I talk about it as another chapter in my book. The happiest day of my life is when my 16-year-old daughter came to me and asked me, could she have a Roth IRA? I didn't have to chase her down like I did her sister. She came to me and said, I want to be able to take a portion of my Kroger's money. She was working at Kroger's pushing buggies. Kroger's is a grocery store. Pushing buggies and making her little courtesy clerk check of about $200 a week. And she said, I'm willing to put $50 a month into a Roth IRA so I can use that money for later. So that is my number two on my list of 7. I believe kids should start investing as soon as they get their first job. I believe kids should start investing like they learn how to make their beds and wash dishes. See, that's a big problem. We don't even want to get our kids in the mindset of putting money towards their financial future. And if you need a job, then you need a retirement account. Hello? Because you clearly are not independently wealthy. Number three is a 401k. Now, the 401k is for tax deduction. And I do talk about it in my chapter of the book. Ted Venner, who is the father of the 401k, said it was never created to be a retirement account. It was created for tax deductions. So when you make too much money to contribute to a Roth IRA, then you should be contributing to a 401k or a SEP IRA because you need the tax deduction. If you do not need the tax deduction, if you're getting an income tax refund check, that money needs to be going into a Roth IRA. it does not need to be going into a 401k. Oh, I know they're giving you the free match. But, again, you're putting money into it. The employer is putting money into it. Neither one of y'all are paying taxes on that money. And it keeps growing and compounding. And then when you go to take the money out, guess who gets stuck with the whole tax bill? You. Who needed the tax deduction more, you or your employer? Your employer. So now you just pay the tax bill for your boss. How much sense does that make? Not very much. Then we have number four, which is going to be your pensions and annuities. So as we talked about in the book, those baby boomers, they had good government jobs with benefits. They had pensions. They get a check every month for the rest of their life. They never have to worry about going broke. We're talking about your military. We're talking about your government workers. We're talking about teachers. We're talking about people who hit retirement age. They never had to worry about a 401k or market volatility. They just know they're going to get a check. 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 So that's the one thing that I think most of us are missing in our financial plans is when they took those pensions away from us in the mid-80s, and y'all got to remember, or excuse me, maybe you don't know, these 401ks that we have, rap music is older than a 401k, meaning rap music came out in 1978, and 401ks, the first one was actually created in 1982. So we are pretty much looking at an investment that is really, really wobbly. But for the people over the last 40 years who have retired successfully, they always had a pension or an annuity. So those two, I really need people to put some focus on because that's going to allow you to continue to have a guaranteed income stream. Most people are familiar with one annuity that we already have, which is Social Security. So you pay into Social Security when you get your first job, whether you're working at Kroger's at the grocery store, you're paying into that Social Security, and when you get to Social Security age, they're going to give you a check every month for the rest of your life. But you don't get to pick how much money you put into Social Security. Social Security or the government picks how much. So for you to be able to have an annuity or create your own pension plan outside of the job, outside of the government system, is going to really make the difference of someone's financial future, how much money they're going to be able to have for the rest of your life. And annuities and pensions, or more annuities, because that's a lot of my focus, annuities can be passed on to heirs. Sometimes pensions can only be passed on to spouse. Social Security can only be passed on to spouse. Annuities can be passed on to the next generation, children and grandchildren. Then I get to investment number five, and that's where we start talking about permanent life insurance. And I say that there needs to be a $50,000 permanent life insurance policy. Why $50,000? Because if a funeral now costs anywhere from $8,000 to $15,000, currently, and we just watch how inflation just raised the prices of milk, gas, eggs, chickens, everything else went up with inflation. What do you think the price of a funeral is going to be 30 and 40 years from now? That same way that the inflation on eggs went up so high, do you not think it's going to go up on funerals? So being and other bills, because we just talked about it with life insurance, there's income replacement, there's probate, there's liquidity needs that people have for money. So being able to have something permanent, I don't care how much extra term insurance you have around that, but we don't want to get to age 80 and then realize that all of our term insurance has gotten too expensive and we have to drop that policy. And then coming over to me and asking me to buy a policy and you want to get that same $250,000 or $500,000 policy, and I come in and I give you a price tag that is well more above your annual income, you're going to be mad at me because somebody should have told you back then that you needed to be able to get something permanent. I always say that you need to have two pairs of shoes. A permanent life insurance policy is like having a pair of tennis shoes. If I get on a plane tomorrow, I'm going to have a pair of tennis shoes. I'm going to have a pair of plaids. I'm going to have something comfortable that I can walk around the mall, the beach, the store in. But if I'm going out that night, I'm putting on some stilettos. I'm putting on some heels. I'm putting on some red bottoms because they're there for a good time, not a long time, and that's what term is. It says it in the name, baby. It's temporary. It's just for a term. So I want people to understand, number five, I'm not just trying to sell expensive life insurance policies. A $50,000 policy don't cost a whole lot of money, but you are going to regret not having it when you are 70 and 80 years old. So it's a critical.
Yeah, let me jump in for some clarity because there's so many terms thrown around. And so permanent life insurance is that the equivalent of whole? I think it is, but you can definitely clarify that for, because some people only hear it in term and whole. I don't know if everybody's heard the term permanent life insurance. So if you could give some clarity on just that nomenclature, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. So you're right. A term life insurance is just for a period of time, 20 to 30 years. A permanent life insurance, it is something that's going to be with you for your whole life permanently. So that's why we say whole life insurance, because it's with you for your whole life. But the actual names of different permanent insurance are universal life, index universal life, variable universal life, as well as whole life insurance. So these are the policies that build cash value. These are the ones that have a smaller death benefit, and they are way more expensive than term. But it's also the same principle of they build equity, they build cash value. So even when you miss a payment on a permanent life insurance policy, you may have enough cash value to keep the policy in force. Term policies don't do that. So I always like to equate a permanent life insurance policy to like a house. It builds some equity that's going to be able to protect you in the long run. A term policy is like renting an apartment. You're there for a good time, not a long time. You're there until your situations change. And typically when your situations change, you're going into a house. So that's why you need to have something permanent, even if it's small. Or if you've got a term policy, make sure that you have a company that is convertible. All term life insurance policies are not convertible, meaning you can think about it like lease to own, where I'm going to lease this house, but eventually it's going to be mine. So being able to say, is my company that I'm with, do they have a convertible term policy, so you can be able to pay for term and know that you can change it over to a permanent policy later. But I do want you to understand 50,000 is going to be my target number for that. You can go up higher than that if you can afford it, but right. I do say 50,000 because of inflation.
No, I love it. I love it. And let me highlight this real quick because I know you got a couple other accounts. And just, again, this is just for clarity purposes. Ashley, who just left us, is always a huge advocate of that term that's convertible to whole, like you just pointed out. And again, just a real quick for anybody who may just hearing that for the first time, the why is when you're young, maybe whole, when you first hear it, just based on what you make, you look at it like, oh, I don't think I can afford it. So if you do decide on a term, as the vet just said, make sure you're checking, is it convertible? Because if it's convertible, as you get more income, then you can convert to what she just told you. So that's why you make sure that if you do term, that it is convertible. I know you had a couple other accounts you wanted to get through as far as your seven. Go ahead, Queen.
Absolutely. So number six is going into our disability, our long-term care, and our HSA accounts. Something that's going to protect your income. If you get sick, you get hurt. If there's anything that prevents you from being able to earn an income, where's the money going to come from? Because, see, all of those other accounts don't make no sense no more because you can't go to work. So being able to have a disability policy is way too critical, way too important. There are too many people who are falling sick and falling hurt, having strokes, heart attack, cancer, all of these different things that are affecting their ability to be able to keep up with their financial future. Most people who go into bankruptcy is because of medical bills. So that disability policy, being able to have a HSA, most people have the FSA, which is the flexible spending account. I need you to focus on the H. It's more expensive. You have to put more money into it. It is a tax deduction for my high-income earners. It's a tax deduction. Put that money into it now so when you take it out in retirement for medical bills and expenses and long-term care and different things, it's tax-free. So you've got to be able to say, what does it look like? I don't want you to spend all your time, energy, and effort building up a financial portfolio. Then you fall sick, and once you fall sick, you spend all your money taking care of you, and everything that you had, you basically lose, and you have nothing to pass on to your family.
Let me jump in real quick, because this is the area that, and she's saying the same thing, but I have to reiterate this. This is the area that most people are missing. So something that we offer to our members just came into fruition through Society of Black Agents. Thankful again once to them. We have something. We have a link where. For our members, we're going to be sending, this is something I'm announcing, we're hopefully going to be able to announce on Friday at my event, that basically we want to check to see if you have enough insurance, because this is the area, once again, that people miss. And so people, like you just said, the vet, they may have even, you know, they're doing well enough and they got plenty of accounts and plenty of insurance covering everything you just talked about, and they think they're just fine and never think to say, am I insured enough? And so even if you know some of what the vet's talking about, the disability insurance basically is real simple. If you still earn money from the work that in your talents that you do yourself, if you haven't gotten to where you're independently wealthy, where your money pays all your bills, if you haven't reached that period and you still earn money from what you do as a living, if you're missing a disability insurance policy, they're real cheap. You literally are missing the linchpin, the cornerstone to your financial house. No house is built properly without a cornerstone, and most people never listen or hear that they need disability insurance. I had to stop and highlight that. We're up against our last break, so we'll save the last account to after the break, if you will. For anybody out there listening, if you want to get in, you do have to press 1 to speak. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you gotta try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wine. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet, like I like it, you know what I'm talking about?
For sure, that's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay, now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad. LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community. If you have a product or service you would like to get out to the smartest audience in all of radio, please contact me again at 404-604-9477, or you can go to mentaldialogue.com and contact me as well. Follow us on IG at mental_dialogue. Keep the return of intelligent radio on the air. This morning's discussion question, who taught you how to be broke? Our special guest is DeVette Jones. If you will, DeVette, you've actually had an experience with one of our sponsors, Sip and Share Wine. Pretty cool. We're just a whole community connected. That's what we do. That's ultimately, we're not just here to talk. We're here to dialogue, connect, do business with one another. And so you've actually had an experience with one of our sponsors. So real quick, just briefly mention that, and then let's go into this last account. Because, again, thank you for this amazing breakdown on no longer being broke, right? This is the beauty of getting the correct information. I think you had a good experience with Sip and Share Wines as well.
I did. We had a workshop for the Society of Black Agents there in Atlanta, and I was one of the featured speakers to talk to some of my fellow insurance and financial professionals about how they could be able to go out and market. And everybody knows me as the wine chick. Even on TikTok and Instagram, my name is Miss Wine Money. I did have a wine business early in 2014, 2015. I put it aside for my financial planning business, but I love a good glass of wine. So, of course, when I gave my presentation, I was sipping on some Sip and Share wine while I talked about money. So it was really dope to be able to meet them, to get the sample pack, to be able to share in those wines. They have some really good varietals. You definitely want to check them out. I know that you're going to find two or three that you absolutely adore. So, yeah, shout out to Sip and Share Wines.
Yep, and a connection once again made through the Mental Dialogue Community Club. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. So that's the idea, that's the concept of this club, where we are ultimately goal is to raise the culture within the community. And so with that said, Queen, you were laying out, I know you had one more account to lay out, but I just had to stop. And let me say shout out to Harvey Macklin, who was my financial advisor in the past and a longtime member and supporter of the club. He was the one that put me on the disability game, because I had been, like most people, thinking I was just fine. I knew I needed to have more insurance than that, than them, was just on the job. Some people are kind of stuck in that space. And when I got with him, he was like, hey, man, this is the corner piece. And since that time, I've been a huge advocate of disability insurance. But again, I know there's another account that you wanted to share as well. Go ahead, Queen.
Well, actually, and it's still going with the disability, I've got to get back on to the long-term care. People are not taking that into consideration. That long-term care, disability insurance usually ends at age 65, do your job or not. So being able to say what happens to you medically, because that's the critical period where a lot of people are in retirement and they start having health problems, and it can wipe away their financial future. So I really have got to press on that, especially in respect of you can do a individual disability policy. I talked about the HSAs. Like you said, this is so important that people do not want to talk about what happens if I get sick or get hurt. Like that's almost as taboo as talking about life insurance. What if I die? We got to talk about it. 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 Being able to have a independent long-term care plan, a policy that says that it's going to pay. Did you know that long-term care is $200 per day to be in a nursing home facility, which is $6,000 per month, which is $72,000 per year? And we think about all the people who are in nursing homes or have medical issues, and it costs them hundreds of thousands, again, $72,000 a year to be in a nursing home. If you're just in that nursing home for 1 year, how much of your 401k or your retirement account will that wipe away? So getting the insurance, because that's what the insurance does, it leverages you against that risk, is so critical to your financial plan. But people want to skate past that because they want to get to number seven. And the seven is the stocks, the brokers, the investment accounts, the crypto, the ETFs, all the ones that seem sexy, all the ones that they tell you is going to be 20 and 40% rate of return. They have all of these pie in the sky. They want to put their money somewhere, and it just turns into a lottery ticket. It's like hitting a slot machine. The money just going to come out pouring out the next day. That's not true. But there is definitely a value of having a brokerage account, because I believe brokerage accounts are long-term investments. Even Warren Buffett talks about them being long-term investments. I'm going to buy a stock. I'm going to buy a stock that I'm going to hold on for the next 30 years. All this day trading and jumping in and out, frankly, you know, most people have to quit their jobs and only day trade if they're going to day trade. And they also are going to really have to learn that and lose a whole lot of money from somewhere upwards of 5 to 8 years before they actually start seeing the growth. Most people don't have that kind of time. And that's the other part of the narrative. I want you to have a brokerage account. I want you to have some stocks. I want you to be able to have some mutual funds. I want you to have the exchange-traded funds inside of your brokerage account, but I want you to be able to get investments that make sense. Don't go after these pie-in-the-sky type of investments where, oh, I heard somebody bought into this stock. Well, why are you buying in? Because somebody else? Are you doing your research? Are you paying attention to the P&E that comes along with that stock? Do you even follow that company? Do you even, you know, why did you buy
that
stock?
P&E, real quick. Just let me jump in real quick. The P&E, just say, explain that real quick.
The price and earnings ratio. And that's basically looking at the statistics. And there's a lot of different statistics that go along with it. But the reality of it is, you need to understand if this company is actually making money. You need to understand if they are just in a money grab, because you got some stocks that will go out here and penny stocks and small companies who are in a fundraising. They're actually just trying to make money so they can be able to leverage that money into growth. Then you've got companies say, we are here and we know how to grow the money. We're using it, the same money for our stocks for research and development. And that research and development gives them an opportunity to improve on that particular arena. So if we talk about Amazon, let's take Amazon for example. And I don't know what their P&E right now. I'm not looking on the computer. But being able to say, if Amazon went from, okay, we just sell books to now, you know, we're doing well, we're going to add in the technology so we can start doing the Prime and the home stuff, and we can start doing the deliveries to everyone's home. And then they took that over to then buying Whole Foods, and then they took that over to now getting into the pharmaceutical realm. You know, they were using the income from their stock purchases to be able to grow their business. Every business don't do that. So that's why you want to be able to research the company and to determine what it is, what is their long-term play. Because they're using your money to make a long-term play because they're figuring it's going to take a long time for you to be able to get the kind of rate of return that right. you expect. Now, can you use it as a play bucket?
Mm-hmm. Let me throw this in as another small caveat as well, because you highlighted, like, are you looking at the P&Es? Basically, so like I say, are you researching if you're going to have this stock, you know, this brokerage account? And then something that Ashley loves to point out, because a lot of times you are put on to doing something based on someone else, you know, that's in your office or a friend that you trust is doing it and they're doing well. She always likes to highlight, even if what they're saying is factual, it still could be based on their propensity for risk versus yours. So, or it may be a value to what they're doing based on their financial goals. So just because something is successful for someone else, you still have to know your own investor profile. So it's like so much goes into it than just taking somebody's word. I just wanted to highlight that because I know Ashley loves to point out the investor profile when it comes to this particular account.
Absolutely. And there are so many different, and all of that investor profile goes with every single investment. A Roth IRA has an investment profile. Even your life insurance policies have an investment profile. So, yes, there is the whole dynamic of, and the reason why you have to use financial professionals like myself to be able to establish these accounts is because we do something called fact-finding. We go through your risk tolerance questionnaire. We do income analysis. We do a needs analysis. We do a budget analysis before we make any recommendation for any of these different investments. We even when we talk about disability, we've got to know how much money you make in order to create a policy that says how much money you would get if you got sick. So,
right.
yes, all of those things are applicable for each of those in each of those investments. We have something in this industry called suitability to make sure that these are the right investments for you.
I like it. Did you get to the last one? I got a brother, Beat Punky, out of St. Louis, wants to jump in, but I want to make sure you cover all seven. I may have cut you off. I'm sorry.
No problem. Let him jump in. I can
all
talk
right,
all that.
That's all good. All right, Brother Pianchi, what you got for us? I don't know if you're in St. Louis today. I just know that's where you're from. So you'll be traveling. Sometimes I call you, in when you're traveling. But go ahead, King. Thanks for being with us.
Well, this is a really great guest you have, and one of the better ones
you,
I've heard you bring on. But this one is for you, Montoya. A good plan. Any of you elderly widows out there that's on Social Security, marry Montoya, that way he can pick it up when you die. You don't want to forget that one.
Hey, how you know I'm not sensitive? How you know you ain't calling in here hurt my feelings with this financial
advice? I know you. But no kidding. Because when my childhood wife died, well, that's the very thing I done. I got remarried so that if something happened to me, then the lady would be able to pick up on my Social Security. And you don't know how they may need. It's the same thing with men. If you have that age in that position and you see a woman that's struggling, you can marry her. You ain't got to have no other type of contact with her. You just doing it so that the money goes to a good purpose when you go.
I love it. I love it. That made my day. Because marriage is a contract. It is a business contract. Yes, it is. Absolutely. I've heard some of your calls before, and I promise you, marriage is not always 100% about love. It is about that money. It's about stability. It is about two people growing together for the financial future. So I absolutely respect your comments. I'm sorry.
That was for you, Montoya.
I appreciate it. Just, hey, can she at least be pretty, Brother Fiona? Can she at least be pretty? Nah, I appreciate you, Brother Fiona. That's my boy. He's one of our longtime callers. We actually got about a minute for a break. So let's do this last break, and then we'll come back. I actually want to play a cut from, again, one of my best friends, Mark Hollywood Rage, a longtime sponsor of the show. I'm going to play this cut. And this is kind of jumping back into the collective concept of how our community views money. If you think about, we started with that Timothy 6:10 that you put in your book about that verse, you know, for the love of money or whatever, how we kind of misconstrue it. I want to now, again, you've given us a lot of great specifics of what we should be doing individual, but I just want to kind of talk about the collective mindset as well. So I think you'll understand what I mean when you hear this cut. We're going to go to break first, and then I'll play that cut. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Have you heard the adage that a picture is worth a thousand words? Well, meet Livy Blue Photography, a premier company specializing in capturing your family portraits and turning them into wall art that stands the test of time. One visit to their website, livyblue.com, and you will immediately be blown away by the experience as you peruse their gallery. The lead photographer, Jalivia Northern, is a published photographer with over 10 years of experience in capturing families, weddings, and school senior portraits. If you want a breathtaking photography experience, contact Livy Blue Photography at livyblue.com. That's LIVIBLUE.com.
That even starts with clarity, meaning I believe the most important thing that you need to have to be successful or to lead people or to drive any movement is clarity. If you don't have clarity, you can't be aggressive. If somebody can't be aggressive in terms of moving something forward, you may get there eventually, but you're not actually going to be moving it at the speed that it needs to be moved, let alone the intensity that it needs to be moved and then the preparation that it needs to be moved to actually make something happen. If people are unclear, they can't be aggressive, and we need aggressiveness. We need understanding. We need clarity on what we're actually trying to do, and I think that's what you're trying to point to. And then the other thing about capitalism that you mentioned was, to respond to that, we're not going to change capitalism in America. That is a useless effort to try to say we're going to change capitalism. It's not going to happen. I think that is putting your ladder against the wrong wall if you think the movement is to try to change capitalism. W.E.B. Du Bois said that capitalism was like having three ears of corn. You eat one, you sell one, and you save one for next year's harvest. Now, if you think about capitalism in that way, and we learn to adopt that philosophy, you can't tell me that we can't build something special. So when in Rome, do as the Romans do. We're not going to change capitalism. But we need to understand it and then begin to use it to our advantage to the point we were talking about earlier, but then how can we use it to develop more in our community, have the right ideas, and then execute on it appropriately.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, who taught you how to be broke? It's actually the name of our special guest, 20-year financial advisor, DeVette Jones, who taught you how to be broke, the author of that. Thank you, Queen, for being with us as you again hear my cut from my best friend, Mark Hollywood Ranger, longtime advisor for regional director, actually, for Ameriprise, also our sponsor with moneymotivation.com. I think you would appreciate their wares, knowing how you love money, as you like to say. So I definitely did highlight moneymotivation.com, highlight you going over there. But coming off of that cut, before I'm pretty sure you want to respond, I'm actually going to read another insert, quick excerpt from my book, Reeducation of the Negro. If you're just now tuning in, we are definitely discussing who taught you how to be broke, as well as intermixing a little bit of the book that DeVette actually helped me get the final parts. I've been trying to work on this book for a couple of years, and I got stuck at the uploading stage with Amazon, so she was able to help me get through that. So again, I want to thank her for that. But this excerpt is called Black Socrates Speaks, Revolutionary Capitalists. and I'll just have you answer the two questions for this segment as well, DeVette. So it says, the system can and will kill you. If so, I plan to die standing on my own two feet. I'm strapping my mind first and my hip second. This is far from just gun talk, but instead using the same system that uses me to my own advantage. Lose the fallacy of leaving one system for another. Relocate, by all means, I might myself, but that would still require you to navigate a man-made system of commerce, exchange of goods, services, and or money. Therefore, no matter the system, master it. Not only get money, but leave a legacy for future generations. This approach does not guarantee life, but succeed and you will live and die standing up. Just my 3 cents. All I ask is that you think. And so the first discussion question on that commentary, DeVette, and I'll have you answer. Does some people's disdain for capitalism hold them back in their own lives, in your opinion, Queen?
No, they ain't got no problem spending money. They support the capitalistic machine. So no, they don't. They do not want to participate in the realms of being the actual business owners, the entrepreneur, or they don't like the way the businesses are running the business, but the reality of it is they spend money like it's going out of business. So, no, I don't. I really don't. I really feel like people, they support the system. They just don't know how to address it.
And so, yeah, I'll take what you're saying just as another perspective, and then I'll ask you the second question. So I'll actually take what you're saying in the sense of that it actually does to a degree from this standpoint, that while they're maybe looking at, in a sense, the businesses or those who have figured out how to be successful, that to a degree their disdain makes them not learn the rules of the game is how a perspective I would put on that question. All right, let's go to the number two. It says, is there a way to exploit capitalism and serve the black community in your opinion?
Yeah, lots of ways. I mean, we talk about being able to buy more life insurance. I mean, we know that we're not going to be here and someone's going to pass away. Then, yes, being able to use life insurance exploits the capitalistic system because we're able to create tax-free generational wealth for generations to come, even the cash value. And I am a huge proponent into permanent whole life cash value, IUL insurance policies. It was my number one investment at 28 years old as a single mother with two kids. I was able to put money into it. If I had money to eat out, I had money to put into it. If people can't afford it, I don't care who you are and what you say. You can afford it. You just don't think that you can. My point behind that is being able to put my money inside of that allowed me to be able to pay for my business. It allowed me to have down payments on my house. It allowed me to put my kids in college. And I was paying $50 a month for a $50,000 policy. See, it wasn't about the fact of I had to have so much money to affect the change, but I was able to use the money that I had. I took it out of the capitalistic machine where I was spending it, where I was eating it, where I was blowing it, and I turned around and repositioned it where I could turn around and create a multi-million dollar financial services company out of the comfort of my own home. So that's where we have to be able to say, what do you have that you can leverage and take it to the next level? It doesn't have to be, I got to go out here and build business credit. I don't have business credit. I don't even like real credit. I don't even like regular credit. Then taking all of these loans from the banks and different things, no. Leverage the resources that you have. Create value, ways that you can actually support and be beneficial to the community, and then bring that to the community. That's that. Like for me, that's the system. That's the sauce. I'm able to help millions of people across the country be able to save millions of dollars in retirement accounts because I don't just sell life insurance. I help people actually save for retirement, I actually help people to avoid paying taxes. You made the comment earlier about, oh, paying taxes. Daisy said, you know, I'm almost living tax-free. My accountant's so good, I'm almost living tax-free. I want to set that up where we can be able to say as much of our money we get to keep. We don't have to turn around and keep giving it away to the governments because the governments are typically run by these capitalistic corporations who tell them what laws to make in order for us to keep buying into the propaganda. So there are little things that we can do, and we collectively have to be able to figure out what we can do within our own realm, within our own space, and then be able to teach and implore those to be used with one another. So I always talk about, you know, tax-free retirement. I always talk about ways to avoid taxes. I know taxes are going to eat away at our retirement. I know taxes are going to go up in the future. I love safe investments. I love a whole, and we were talking about the 2 to 4% investment. That might just be a whole life insurance policy right now, paying a 2 to 4% investment, because it's still paying a return even when the stock market is down, and the stock market is down 30% right now. So being able to say, what is it that I can do? I can help people to put money so their money is still actually making money and they're not losing money like the rest of the world. Because part of this interest rate hike that they have going on right now, they want us broke. They want us out of jobs. They want us to be at a place where we give up all of our businesses and go back to working 9 to 5s, go back to factory work, go back to being slaves to the system. See, this is what the big propaganda wants us to do. And it's good that they do that, because if they don't do that, we won't have enough money for Social Security. See, I'm talking both sides of the coin, but you understand what I'm saying. There are things that you can do to be able to upheave the capitalist system and make things better for not only yourself, but the people in your community. And we live in a global community now. It's not just the people down your street and in your city. I'm in Tennessee, and I'm licensed in 30 states. I have one of my biggest clients in Montana. Ain't no black people in Montana. But I'm able to help them to start leveraging and doing things that's going to keep them from giving away all of their wealth to taxes, to the system, to governments. So I hope I answered your question.
No, yes, you have.
I think
I
people
love your
are able.
No, absolutely. And again,
I think they are able to.
No, and as a reminder, again, I just really love pointing out, again, you were one of the first buyers of the book. The questions are never a yes or no or right and wrong. The questions are to create these dialogues. Like, that's what I want to make people to fully understand, in a sense, you know, what the goal of the reeducation of the Negro is. It's not listening to Montoya's manifesto or what our community needs to be doing. It's having the conversations we don't like to have on race, sex, culture, and money. When we, like at the beginning of this show, it was mentioned the idea of how you say your mother let you see your budget, and how many parents still to this day never even share what their finances are with their children, because we've actually not realizing, when you say who taught you how to be broke, we're laying the seeds for not being transparent to set your next generation up. It's like you try to wait till they're older to expose them, and it's actually backwards, like expose them from the beginning. But let me give my thoughts on this actual question. Is there a way to exploit capitalism and serve the black community? I did this one show probably about 5 years ago, and I was fortunate enough to bring on two accountants, because my next book that I hope and look to write and I haven't got the exact title, but it's basically this concept that I have about how to create generational wealth in one generation. And it's absolutely taking advantage of, as you love to talk about, the whole life insurance policy. And part of the idea, I'm not going to go through the whole thing here, but part of the idea, again, relating it to the question of, is there a way to exploit capitalism to serve the black community? I want to connect the dots. So part of what I talk about in this plan, and again, I ran it against two accountants. They loved it. We did it live on the air. They scrutinized it and thought it was, you know, in a sense, a brilliant thing. But the one part of the aspect was my financial advisor that I just bragged about earlier, Harvey Macklin, who got me the disability insurance. He broke down that his mentor was a Chinese American or whatever. And we always highlight how we'll say they come over here and how they move in America or whatever. One of the things that he found out was one of the first things when some of them, in a sense, do move here, you know, whatever their circumstances may have been, if you were in China and they immigrate here. And we also talk about the ones that have the restaurants and all that kind of stuff. A whole nother show in itself. But in them having the restaurants, one of the first things they'll do, their first sacrifice is to buy a whole life insurance. And so they get into the restaurant business, start making money. And one of the first generation's sacrifice is to buy $1 million policy, if possible, based on the money they're making. So the first generation sacrifices their, if you will, their lifestyle to put more money, a whole life insurance, in order to bring it down so that when they pass,
sacrifice. It's this. I got a life insurance policy I pay $600 a month for. I also pay $600 for a car note. Is that car expensive? No.
I'm saying that for you, but I got to highlight, we only got a minute and a half, but I do have to highlight a lot of people, $600 is still a lot of money for, just keeping it a buck. That's not expensive for you. That's expensive for a lot of people. So even they look at it as a sacrifice. The immigrants that I'm talking about, because they're coming here not with much, and they look at it as a sacrifice of lifestyle. I'm just kind of pointing out that they see it that way. But they do it knowing
it's a sacrifice. You don't understand. It's an investment. That's why I interrupted. It's not a sacrifice. It's actually an investment. And if more people thought of it more as an investment than a sacrifice, then that's part of the mentality, Montoya. They have got to be able to think of it as an investment and a leverage. And that's why people, as long as you use words like sacrifice, that's how they'll see it.
I got you. And again, I'm just delivering how they delivered it to him. And they're actually doing exactly what you're talking about. You know what I mean? But they do, that first generation, that's how they say it, because the next generation doesn't got that leverage. I was trying to get into it. Anyway, it's all good. The bigger point was how long went through the exploitation as a community, 246 years. Sometimes we try to fix things in a generation. And so I wanted to highlight that if enough people in the first generation was to consider what I'm talking about, then the next generation would be set up to do some of the things that we try to do now, because we don't think about how it's been a long-term plan to put us in the position that we've been in. So we can't get out of it immediately. We have to step through it in a very very intentional way, is the point. So thank you so much, Queen, for being with us. If you will, share with them how to stay in contact with you.
You can go to my website, lifevisionsolutions.com, or my favorite version, iamwealthynow.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and on TikTok as Miss Wine Money. I do a lot of financial commentary, current financial commentary, not history, present, so you know how to move forward with your money, not looking back to what's happened 50, 11 years ago. But that website again, iamwealthynow.com, lifevisionsolutions.com.
Thank you so much. See y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think.